Chapter 16, Bold as Love. The hood of his stylish robe raised against a chill wind, Palpatine hurried through the streets of Theed. The sudden turn in the weather abetted his desire to avoid making eye contact with strangers, or worse, encountering anyone he knew. As he grew stronger in the dark side, the profane world became a stranger and stranger place, swept by currents he'd had no previous awareness of, and populated by vaguely outlined life forms he saw as magnitudes of the Force. As Plagueis ordered, he had been living in the future, consorting with the dark side to execute the plans he and his master had designed. Vidar Kim's office was in the eastern portion of the city, a long walk from the apartment Palpatine had been renting for the past several years, and the quickest route required crossing and recrossing the Saliu tributaries that define Theed's districts and neighborhoods. He had never had much fondness for the city, with its ancient buildings, public squares, its tens of thousands of residents going about their lives, and now Theed began to seem like some stage set in an elaborate theater production, and Naboo itself a node in a vast web being woven by the dark side, into which so many planets and species would ultimately be drawn. At no time during the visit to Sojourn had Darth Plagueis asked to hear his feelings about the death order he had issued for Vidar Kim. And no wonder, since Palpatine had given his word to do anything Plagueis asked of him. But it was obvious that the Mune had sensed Palpatine's conflict. Fear and hatred had prompted him to murder his family in cold blood. But his relationship with Kim was as close as he had come to having a true friendship. Even though, as Naboo's senator, Kim stood between Palpatine and his immediate goal. On Sojourn, Plagueis' parting words to him were, "Remember why the Sith are more powerful than the Jedi, Sidious. Because we are not afraid to feel. We embrace the spectrum of emotions, from the heights of transcendent joy to the depths of hatred and despair. Fearless, we welcome whatever paths the dark side sets us on, and whatever destiny it lays out for us." Clearly, Plagueis knew that Palpatine had helped seal Kim's fate by encouraging him to take a stand against the Trade Federation, and therefore against Plagueis. That his master hadn't said as much was perhaps his way of reminding Palpatine that he would have to be prepared to accept any and all consequences that sprang from his machinations. It was a subtle lesson, but one Palpatine took to heart. From then on, he would be careful to plan his moves meticulously, and more important, to allow the dark side to complete its lapidary work of transforming him into a powerful being. Recalling Plagueis' surprise Force choke, he pledged also never again to lower his guard. But he viewed the lesson as part of the process of their learning to rely on each other and forge themselves into a team. United in the dark side, they could keep no secrets. There could be no chance of one being able to act without the other being aware. They had to learn to see through each other. Palpatine hadn't been attempting to flatter Plagueis when he had called him wise. Not entirely, at any rate. The Mune was powerful beyond Palpatine's present understanding, the only being capable of guiding the galaxy into the future, a crescendo. At times, it was difficult to grasp that they would see in their lifetime the fall of the Republic and the annihilation of the Jedi Order. And yet Palpatine seemed to know it to be true. A grand design was unfolding, in which he wasn't merely a player, but an architect. Resigning himself to Kim's death was easier than it might have been because Kim, too, had become a broken man in the wake of the deaths of his wife and younger sons. His reaching out to the son he had voluntarily surrendered to the Jedi was an act of desperation, and based on nothing more than a desire to assure that the Kim family line continued. How like the self-important royals among whom Palpatine had been raised. So fervent to be remembered by those who followed. Rather than demand or ensure that Palpatine got his hands dirty once more, Plagueis had insisted on providing him with an agent to facilitate the assassination. Plagueis had said that they needed to guarantee Palpatine's deniability and make certain that no hint of scandal pursue him. But Palpatine had begun to wonder. Despite all the talks about partnership and disclosures, had Plagueis merely been making excuses for the fact that he harbored doubts about Palpatine's abilities? Palpatine thought back to the story Plagueis had recounted about the murder of Kerid Santhi. Blame had fallen on the chefs who had prepared the bloat eel. Kim's death, however, wouldn't result from food poisoning, but public assassination. So who might emerge as having the most to gain from his death? Certainly not the Naboo or the Grand Protectorate. The fact that fingers would point instead to the Trade Federation made him wonder why Plagueis would want to place the cartel in a position that jeopardized its chances of seating new worlds in the Senate. So once more he found himself wondering, did Plagueis have an ulterior motive for not wanting the Trade Federation to succeed? He wanted Kim's death to be viewed as a message. But by whom? Perhaps Palpatine was meant to be the recipient. When Plagueis said that many of the senators were expendable, that they retained their seats only because of him, was he, in the same breath, saying that Palpatine, even as Sidious, was also expendable, easily replaced by another forceful apprentice? While the Mune encouraged transparency in Palpatine, he sometimes made himself opaque. Would he, at some point, bequeath all his knowledge to his apprentice? Or would he hold back, merely to keep the upper hand?
Thank you for coming on such short notice, Palpatine, Kim said in a rush, ushering him into an office cluttered with data disks and flimsy printouts, and smelling of sweat, stale air, spoiling food. Tall windows opposite the hardwood entry doors overlooked the palace, including the new tower that Tapelo, in accordance with tradition, had constructed on being elected monarch.
What I have to say will place you at some risk, but there's no one I trust more than you.
Kim was in constant motion while he spoke, moving from his desk to the windows and back again.
I'm not entirely sure that this office is secure, but we have to take the chance.
Palpatine concealed a frown of misgiving and gestured to the couch.
Please, Vidar, sit and unburden yourself.
Kim came to a halt, exhaled wearily, and did as Palpatine suggested. His face was drawn, his hair in disarray, his normally neat beard and mustache in need of grooming.
Palpatine, I have good reason to suspect that Tapelo and Varuna arranged the crash that claimed the lives of my family.
Palpatine's surprise was sincere.
Vidar, the crash was investigated and ruled an accident. Some problem with the anti-grav... Accidents can be faked, planned. You've piloted speeders ever since I've known you. You know that systems can be sabotaged.
Palpatine sat down opposite him.
What possible motive would they have for killing your family?
Kim's bloodshot eyes fixed on him.
I know their dirty secrets, Palpatine. I know about the payments they've been receiving from the Trade Federation since Tapelo took office, the laws they've enacted to open all of Naboo to survey and plasma exploitation. I know about the deals they struck with certain members of the electorate to engineer Tapelo's unprecedented victory in the last election.
Even so, Palpatine said after a moment,
why would they bring your family into this?
Kim all but growled.
By relieving me of my plenary duties, they risk angering many of the royals who support me. Instead, they hope to persuade me to tender a resignation out of grief, out of fear, out of I don't know what.
Tapelo would know better than to attempt such a despicable act.
You give him too much credit. The crash was meant to be a message to me, but it had the opposite effect.
How so? Palpatine said, leaning toward him.
I'm leaving for Coruscant this afternoon, and my first act will be to notify the Jedi Order.
Palpatine sat up straight.
Vidar, the Jedi listen only to the Senate and the Supreme Chancellor. You can't simply walk into the temple. I'll contact the members of the Council through my son. If I can convince Ranha to leave the Order, the information will be my gift to the Jedi.
And suppose Ranha doesn't want any part of this? Palpatine crossed his arms across his chest.
Have you ever been able to speak with him? It's my understanding that Jedi aren't permitted contact with their parents.
Kim scowled and studied the carpet.
Regardless, I was able to make contact.
And? Kim's expression was cheerless when he looked up.
He told me that I'm a stranger to him, and that the Kim name has no significance for him.
Palpatine sighed.
Then, that's the end of it.
No, he has agreed to speak with me in person on Coruscant.
I'm determined to convince him, Palpatine. Family must come first.
Palpatine bit back what he was about to say, and began again.
Will you promise to keep me informed, or at least let me know how to reach you?
Kim went to the desk and sorted through the mess until he found the flimsy he was looking for.
This is my itinerary for the coming week, he said, passing the flimsy to Palpatine. Palpatine, if something untoward should happen to me on Coruscant...
Stop, Vidar. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. Kim ran a hand over his head.
You're right.
He returned to the couch and sat.
Palpatine, we're too close in age for me to have thought of you as a son. But I do consider you the younger brother I never had.
Palpatine nodded without a word.
If I fail to get through to Ranha or the Jedi, I can at least alert my colleagues on the Senate Investigatory Committee.
Palpatine restrained an impulse to stand.
I think you're wrong about Tapalo and Varuna, Vidar, but I can say without hesitation that you will be risking your life by making such accusations public. I'm perfectly aware of that, Palpatine. But if Ranha rejects my plea, what else will I have to live for?
Palpatine placed his hand on Kim's shoulder.
The small part you will play in the revenge of the Sith.
By the time he left Kim's office, the weather had turned sharply colder. Snow flurries were swirling around the palace towers, and the shallows to the Soliu tributaries were sheened with ice. The agent from Coruscant whom Plagueis had provided, Sate Pestage, was waiting in a small plaza behind the Parnelli Art Museum, warming his hands with his breath.
The Naboo have never heard of climate control, he commented as Palpatine approached.
Recalling his early conditioning sessions on Glacial Mygeto, Palpatine almost laughed at the man's remarks. Instead, he said,
Radical change has always come slowly to this world.
Pestage cast a glance at the stately columns that enclosed the domed museum.
No doubt about that.
Slightly taller and older than Palpatine, he was sinewy and capable-looking. His brown eyes were close-set and glistening, and his pointed nose and angular cheekbones were emphasized by black hair that had receded from his forehead and temple. Plagueis had mentioned that Pestage had been born in Diplona, on Siutric IV, an industrialized ecumenopolis outside of which Darths Bane and Zanna had once lived secret lives. Plagueis hadn't revealed how he had discovered Pestage. Perhaps Damask Holdings had had dealings with Pestage's influential and extensive family. But he had said that Pestage was someone Palpatine might want to consider adding to his growing entourage of aides and confidants. From the pocket of his robe, Palpatine prized the flimsy Vidar Kim had given him and handed it over.
His itinerary for Coruscant.
Perfect.
Pestage slipped the flimsy into his pocket.
I want you to wait until his business on Coruscant is concluded.
Whatever you say.
He's threatening to alert the Jedi Order and a Senate investigatory committee about various deals that were made. Pestage snorted.
Then he deserves everything that's coming to him.
He scanned their surroundings without moving his head.
Have you made a decision about who to use from the data I supplied?
The Maladians, Palpatine said. A group of highly trained humanoid assassins. They had struck him as the obvious choice. Pestage nodded.
Can I ask why?
Palpatine wasn't accustomed to having to justify his decisions, but answered regardless. The Mandalorian Death Watch has its own problems, and the Bandogora its own galactic agenda.
I couldn't agree more, Pestage said. Besides, the Maladians are known to honor all their contracts.
How soon can you have them on Coruscant? Pestage looked at him askance.
Perhaps it's best that that remains on a need-to-know basis.
The man's audacity both impressed and bridled Palpatine. There can be no mistake, Sate. A long-suffering look flared on Pestage's face, but his tone was compliant when he responded.
If there are, then I'm certain this will be our final conversation. I know fully well what Magister Damask and you are capable of, and I hope to make myself worthy of continuing to serve you. One day, perhaps, you'll begin to think of me as family, as I'm sure Senator Kim does you.
Just how much does this man know? Palpatine wondered.
You've no qualms about living a double life, Sate?
Some of us are simply born into it, Pestage said, indifferent to Palpatine's penetrating gaze.
You'll contact me here?
As soon as the work is completed, just make sure to stay close to your calm.
You'll also be contacting Magister Damask? Pestage rocked his head.
He gave me the impression that he would be unavailable for the next few weeks. But I suspect we're safe in assuming that the results won't escape his notice.
On a planet at the edge of known space, above the hollow well of a gleaming metallic table, a quarter-sized, three-dimensional image of a tall biped rotated between graphs and scrolling lines of anatomical and physiological data. In a spoon-like seat, suspended from the White Room's towering ceiling, sat Higo Damask, dwarfed by a trio of slender-tailed scientists, two crested males, and a female whose complexion was more gray than white.
This being is representative of the entire species?
The scientist called Ni Timor asked in a gentle, almost susurrant voice.
This one murdered six members of his species, Damask said. But he is otherwise typical of the Yinchori.
Tenebris had introduced him to the planet Kamino early on in his apprenticeship, but he hadn't visited in more than 3 years. In stocking Sojourn's Greel forests with rare and in some cases extinct fauna, he had hired the Kaminoans to grow clones from biological samples he procured through brokers of genetic materials. The glassy eyes, long necks, and sleek bodies of the bipedal indigenes spoke to a marine past, though in fact they had been land dwellers for millions of years preceding a great flood that had inundated Kamino. With global catastrophe looming, most technologically advanced sentient species would have abandoned their homeworld and reached for the stars. But the Kaminoans had instead constructed massive stilt cities that were completed even while the oceans of their world were rising and submerging the continents. They had also turned their considerable intellect to the science of cloning as a means of ensuring the survival of their species, and along the way had taken genetic replication farther than any known species in the galaxy. Residing outside the galactic rim, the Kaminoans performed their work in secret and only for the very wealthy. It was unlikely, in any case, that they would have abided by the Republic's restrictions on cloning. Moral principles regarding natural selection seemed to be something they had left on the floor of what was now Kamino's planet-wide ocean, which perhaps explained why they were no more reluctant about providing game animals for Sojourn than they were about supplying shovel-handed clones to work in the mines of inhospitable Subterral. Damask considered them to be one of the galaxy's most progressive species, almost Sith-like in their emotional aloofness and scientific objectivity. The female scientist, Kosai, had highlighted an area of the Yinchori's midbrain.
"The lack of neural pathways to the forebrain indicates an innate proclivity for violence, although the absence could be idiosyncratic."
The third Kaminoan, Laknor, called for an enhancement of the highlighted area.
"The Yanchori's violent nature could complicate matters, Magister. Without access to sociological studies, we have no means of determining to what degree the culture of violence shapes the beings born into it. A clone raised in a laboratory setting might exhibit feral behavior unless provided with some means to express aggression."
"An outlet," Kosai offered.
"Scientific studies are available," Damask said. "The question is, can compliance be bred into them without affecting their violent tendencies?"
"Probably not without disturbing the basic personality matrix," Kosai said. "We might produce a clone that is merely Yinchori in aspect, but lacks the signature characteristics of the species."
Damask frowned. "That won't do."
"Have you considered using a more acquiescent species?" Ni Timor asked.
"Which would you recommend?"
"One of the placid species. Dithorians, for example, or Kaamasi?"
Damask shook his head. "Neither species would suit my purposes. What about humans?"
"Our experience with humans is limited, though of course we have grown many replacement organs." "Human emotionalism is somewhat problematic," Kosai said, "but not unsolvable."
Damask considered the comment and then agreed with the Kaminoan's assessment. Emotion in human beings was a fatal flaw, the same characteristic that fueled their need to form strong bonds and believe that all life was sacred, made them compassionate to a fault. Only weeks earlier, on Sojourn, he realized that even Sidious, for all his growing strength in the dark side, remained a prisoner of his emotions. That Sidious was feeling an urge to stretch out with his new powers was to be expected and encouraged, but he had to be taught the lesson every Sith needed to learn. With great subtlety, Sidious had manipulated Vidar Kim into a position where he had become a liability and therefore had to die. He hadn't bothered to address the issue directly, because the time had come for Sidious to embark on the political career that would carry him to the chancellorship. Still, Sidious's reaction to the assassination orders, fleeting as it had been, had convinced Plagueis of the need for additional tests. Sidious didn't need to have his mistakes explained to him. He needed to experience the consequences.
"Perhaps, Magister," Laknor was saying, "if we understood your plans for the Yinchori clones."
"I would expect them to serve as soldiers."
"Ah," Ni Timor said. "Then obedience, not mere compliance, must be a prime consideration." "And yet the need for some measure of free will," Kosai was quick to point out. "Or else why not simply use combat automata?"
Laknor's large eyes fixed on Damask.
"These Yinchori appear to be ready-made for war, Magister. Are there so few of them in the galaxy that you need to clone an army?"
He had deliberately avoided mentioning Yinchori immunity to force suggestion because he should have no way of knowing about that, or indeed anything about the actions of midichlorians. But it was precisely the reptilian's capability to fashion force bubbles that he hoped to explore.
"As you've already pointed out," he said after a moment, "their innate bellicosity interferes with their ability to follow orders."
Mostly to himself, Ni Timor said,
"We would need to assure that their violent tendencies remained intact while their behavior was less willful."
"Yes," Damask said.
Kosai craned her long neck.
"Very challenging," though perhaps if we could be supplied with a template for experimentation.
She gestured toward the 3D images.
Is this specimen available for thorough evaluation?
I could have him delivered to Kamino, Damask said. Assuming for the moment that you can discover some way to provide me with what I need, how much time would be required to grow a mature clone?
The three scientists traded looks.
In the case of the Yanchori,
Neetimor said at last,
certainly no fewer than 12 standard years to allow for both physical and mental development. As you know, we have had some success in accelerating the growth rate of certain cloned creatures, but not yet with full sentience, owing to the plasticity of the youthful brain.
More important, Lacnor said, while we might be able to grow a few clones, our facilities are at present inadequate to produce an army of any size.
We would also need to consult with military specialists regarding programming,
Kosai added.
That can all be arranged, Damask said. Would you have any objections to working with Rotana Heavy Engineering?
Of course not,
Neetimor said. Then Damask Holdings can provide whatever funding you need.
Kosai's eyes appeared to widen.
The Prime Minister will be very pleased to learn of this,
she said, with what passed for animation on Kamino.
In his apartment in Snowbound Feed, Palpatine watched a holonet replay of Jedi Knight Ranha Kim leaping from a Coruscant taxi in mid-flight onto a monospeeder piloted by the Maladian contracted to assassinate the Elder Kim. At the same time, Palpatine spoke by comlink with Sate Pestige.
Is Naboo threading the story? Pestige asked.
On every network. Breaking news, Coruscant,
a female correspondent was saying.
Chamal Sector Senator Baida Kim of Naboo was killed earlier today while en route to Mezzaline Spaceport in what appears to have been an assassination. A Havacam stationed at Node SSJ in the Sak District captured the moment when a monospeeder approached Senator Kim's taxi from behind and its helmeted pilot unleashed a salvo of blaster bolts, killing Kim instantly and barely missing a second passenger, an as-yet-unidentified Jedi Knight. The Havacam recording shows the human male Jedi, armed with an activated lightsaber, hurling himself from the taxi and knocking the pilot assassin from the seat of the monospeeder. Eyewitnesses state that the Jedi managed to steer the assailant to a pedestrian walkway close to where the speeder crashed and burned, but real-time news has yet to learn whether the assassin survived the fall. Wounded in the attack, the pilot of the taxi was taken to Sak Med Center, where his condition is listed as grave. Is the Maladian alive?
Palpatine demanded of Pestige.
No. She spiked herself with a neurotoxin while Ranha was trying to force information from her.
You're certain?
Absolutely certain.
The fool,
Palpatine fumed.
Why didn't she wait until Kim had exited the taxi at Mezzaline?
You instructed me to make it public, which is exactly what I told her. She made a point of firing in full view of the security cam, but I haven't been able to determine whether or not she knew that Kim was riding with a Jedi. Based on the placement of the blaster bolts, I think she planned on taking out both of them.
And if she'd succeeded, the Jedi would be conducting their own investigation.
They are regardless, Pestage said. Because Ranhar issued a statement to the media that he may have been the target.
Palpatine directed a scowl at the comlink cam.
Why didn't you warn her about Ranhar?
I did warn her. Maybe she wanted to add another Jedi kill to her resume.
Another?
As I told you, the Maladians are very good at what they do.
Palpatine considered it.
If Ranha is under the impression that he might have been the target, then Kim may not have revealed his suspicions about Tapelo and Varuna.
He didn't.
I had him under surveillance from the moment he arrived on Coruscant, and he didn't go anywhere near the Jedi Temple or meet with anyone on the Senate Investigatory Committee. I have recordings of the three meetings he had with Ron Haar in his office in the Senate Annex, and at no time did he offer anything more than veiled references to intrigues on Naboo.
Was he able to persuade Ron Haar to leave the Order?
No. Ron Haar said that he respected Kim for being his... what was the word he used? Progenitor. But that he considers the temple to be his home and the Jedi to be his family.
Palpatine forced an exhale. I warned him.
Kim tried to convince him that family blood comes first. But Ron Haar might as well have been listening to an episode of Coruscant Confessions.
Magister Damask will not be pleased. What rumors are circulating in the Senate?
That Kim may have been involved in shady business. That he double-crossed a group of lobbyists. You've got the Senate worried if that was the idea.
Plagueis would be satisfied to learn as much, Palpatine thought. The message, he now realized, had been directed not to anyone in particular, but to the Senate itself. Beyond the goal of advancing Palpatine's political career ahead of schedule, the murder of Kim had spread apprehension in the galactic capital.
It's done. In any case, he said finally.
And without any leads for the police or the Jedi to pursue, you're completely in the clear.
Palpatine relaxed somewhat. You've done well, Sate. The close call notwithstanding. There's a place for you among my support group if you're interested.
Pestage Two sounded relieved. Then I suppose I'll be seeing you on Coruscant. Senator Palpatine.